"What do you know of these horsemen, Aragorn?" he said. "Do we sit here waiting for sudden death?" "I have been among them," answered Aragorn. "They are proud and willful, but they are true-hearted, generous in thought and deed, but not cruel, wise but unlearned, writing no books but singing many songs, after the manner of the children of men before the dark years. But I do not know what has happened here of late, nor in what mind the Rohirrim may now be between the traitor Saruman and the threat of Sauron. They have long been the friends of the people of Gondor, though they are not akin to them. It was in forgotten years long ago that Eorl of Young brought them out of the north, and their kinship is rather with the Bardings of Dale and with the Beornings of the Wood, among whom may still be seen many men tall and fair, as are the riders of Rohan. At least, they will not love the orcs." The Two Towers. In this episode of the Great Company Podcast, we will be riding with Rohan. It's been a while since we dug into just one trait. The last time we did so, we explored the Gondor trait. This time around, we'll be exploring their allies to the north, discussing how Rohan works in the game, how well it's been developed, and the best tips and strategies for making your Rohan deck worthy of a ride to World's Ending. All coming up on Episode 17.
It is episode 17 of the Grey Company Podcast, and I'm Derek, one of your hosts. Today we will be discussing all things Rohan. This is one of the first traits to be developed in the game, as the Shadow of Mirkwood cycle first gave us the cards we needed to build early Rohan decks. However, Rohan has continued to get support even in the latest deluxe expansion, The Voice of Isengard, and in this latest cycle. Today we'll take some time to really uncover Rohan's role in the game, but before we do that, let's check in with the rest of the guys. Matthew, how are you these days, sir?
Oh, you know, I'm okay. Hanging in, working a lot, trying to... I haven't had much time to play, although I guess I played last weekend, and that was fun. We played the new quest, the new adventure pack. We played it four-player, and I'm sure we'll talk about this a little bit in tonight's episode, but we got stomped all four times. Very, very difficult in four players, and we even tweaked our decks a little bit and still weren't able to beat it. I don't really remember what happened. I think we kept threading out, but I'll save those comments for later on. So I liked the quest. It was fun. It was a fun way to lose, which doesn't happen every single time. But other than that, not playing a whole lot. I think we might start up a campaign mode thing with my group. They brought it up. So it's like, I guess I'll cave. So I think now that we have seven quests for the campaign mode, we might start diving in.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I've been super busy. I've hardly gotten to play at all. I did get to play a session of the One Ring, and we played some Hobbit Tales, so I got a little bit of Lord of the Rings Tolkien gaming in the last week, but I haven't even gotten to play Ninan Elf yet, so I'm going through withdrawals, man. I'll have to get some methadone or something. I just haven't had the time to play lately. Anyways, Ian, how are you?
I'm good. Pretty much the same story as you guys, just being really busy, trying to find time to play. That's why, to me, Octagon is a lifesaver, even for solo play, because it's so hard these days for me to pull out the cards and play, even though I love to. That's still my preferred method, but, you know, just load it up real quick on my computer. You know, if I lose or have to quit the game, no big deal. I don't have to put stuff away. I just just quit out of it, so yeah. Because of that, I've been able to get at least some games in. The big thing is I'm trying to catch up on all these Nightmare Packs, and they keep releasing them so quickly that I haven't even played all of them yet, which would, like, 6 months ago when I had a little bit more free time, I'd be, like, shaking my finger at myself, like, how dare you not play every last quest that's been released, but now I'm like, I'll get to it.
I get to when my kid starts crying. Stop scrying.
I remember asking Matt at Gen Con why they were coming out so frequently, and he basically, if I remember correctly, said they're trying to get caught up, and then I assume once that happens, then they will come out far less frequently because they'll be caught up. But it's hard to believe. You know, when I read the article that said Heirs of Numenor came out in 2012, I was like, God, really? It feels like yesterday, but that's 2 years ago, so it seems like it's really quick, but it actually isn't all that recent of a set.
Yeah, and it's actually good timing, because I finally feel like there are some decks that are getting to be kind of consistent or close to consistent against those quests. So I think it'll be good to, I know a lot of people are like, oh, it's going to be terrifying, and I'm sure it will be, but I for one have a deck that now consistently beats Intuithilion solo, and I can't wait to take that deck unmodified against the Nightmare and just watch it get destroyed.
Right.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah, for me personally, Heirs of Numenor, I have to say, in retrospect, is my favorite of the deluxe expansions so far. So I'm looking forward to, I like how Matt Newman was saying in the article, kind of outlining how they fixed, because even though they're newer quests, there were some stuff that was weird, like you dropping the scroll is the best thing, which makes no sense at all for the theme. So I like how he talked about how, you know, the enemies can actually grab it, and if you don't kill them quick enough, they run off with it. So again, they're using Nightmare to fix it and make the quest better. So
yeah, and when he mentioned that some players used to let Kelador die to avoid a certain stage, and I was like, isn't that what Mitch Knight did in the progression series? I don't remember. I know Matt has said he has watched the progression series to sort of give, you know, for ideas of how players beat the quests, but I think that's what we did, or certainly when I have played that quest, that has always been a consideration. Do we let Kelador die? And oftentimes the answer is yes. So I'm while I dread Nightmare into Intuithilion, I also am excited to sort of see how it's changed and those sorts of things. So I can't wait for my set to arrive, and hopefully it'll be this upcoming week.
One can only hope that the objective allies will ramp up along with the rest of the encounter deck, so when that ranger pops out of the encounter deck, it's like an H-bomb going off and it clears the staging area or something.
So here's the deal, Derek, is you have hope in one hand and you have archery in the other. You let me know which one fills up first.
Oh my god, you're right. But let me say the art, that Mumok art, the new Mumok Elite, whatever it's called, does that look cool?
It looks awesome.
Yeah, cool. I'm excited.
All right, well, let's speaking of Mumoks, let's get back to the only horse riders in the world to take on gigantic Oliphants.
Wait a minute, do I get skipped on the intros? Is that what happened?
You had your 2 seconds.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. I'm sorry.
Fair enough.
We just got back from a long drive with a very cranky toddler, so I'm a little off tonight. Let's back it up. Dan, how are things over in the Hall of Beorn these days?
Just think of me as a giant furry cranky toddler. Things are good, and I, as busy as I've been lately, I've actually still been able to play some because kind of the group here in Austin is kind of, it's good, I don't mean this in a bad way, but it's kind of obliging me to do it because it's something that I helped be a part of starting it, and now I feel this like sense of like, okay, even if it's really busy, I gotta make the time to have that at least once a week. So yeah, it's been really good. We're doing our campaign going through using Old Forest and now Fog on the Barrow Downs, actually playing through the campaign again with those kind of intermediary quests. So it's been a lot of fun.
Excellent.
Also playing a lot of Sylvan decks, and my buddy and I, shout out to Terrence, have perfected the kind of Sylvan secrecy thing that I was telling Matt existed and he was skeptical of. So I get to say I told you so, Matt.
Who are you talking to? Certainly not me.
Oh, I'm talking to you. You were like, oh, Sylvan secrecy? What are you talking about? That'll never happen.
Yeah, my name's not Matt, though, fool. It's Matthew.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Ugh. It's all right. As a random side note, I think I beat the Old Forest 2 weekends ago. I remembered, like, oh, so I finally beat... Or not the Old Forest. What's the Gen Con quest called? Barrow Downs. I think I posted a photo on
Gen Con was Old Forest.
Right,
the new
that
one
we
is...
beat that night. But yeah, Barrow Downs. What a great quest. I just love the art. It's super fun. So those of you who have to wait for it to be on POD, you know, you're in for a treat, I think.
Cool. And speaking of local groups, assuming this goes to print in time, if you are in the Atlanta area, we're going to be at Gigabytes this Thursday, November 6th. We need lots of people to come out. So the two people who live in Atlanta who listen to this, come out, make the drive OTP, and then come to Gigabytes.
Book your flights now.
It's not going to be that good. Well, since I already used my perfect segue about the Mumoks, we'll just get right back to the show notes here. So let's talk about the purposes. And what Rohan is all about in the living card game, you know, how does it work at its most basic level, and kind of how does it fit within the confines of the game?
Worst trait in the game.
Says the guy who ran an AMR deck for like 6 months.
You know, it wouldn't be me if I wasn't just disparaging the game left and right. No, I love Rohan. Man, I haven't used my AMR deck in a long time, but, you know, at their most basic level, it's about allies leaving play. sacrificing and themselves in
possibly
some way,
questing.
Possibly questing. Team, you know, Eowyn's pretty good at that. But, yeah, I mean, you know, we all know that they're basically found in two spheres, or at least two primary spheres, and that's tactics and spirit. So the spirit ones are very good at questing, though they can sacrifice themselves to either do some location control or increase their willpower, whereas the tactic ones sacrifice themselves to pull enemies down or what have you. So super, yeah. Super fun. I enjoy this trait a lot.
I know before we were talking a little bit about whether Rohan and Sylvan would feel a little too similar because they both involve allies leaving play, but now having a chance to play Sylvan a ton, I'll say that it feels very different than playing Rohan. The two feel very different. You know, Sylvan, I am constantly trying to get those allies back into my hand and putting them back out, whereas Rohan, yeah, it's just straight about sacrifice. You're not necessarily going to get them back. Which, you know, ties in with the theme of Rohan, I think.
Those horses are so fast, you never see them again.
Just shooting past. Well, that's exactly, I mean, in a sense, that almost is exactly the way it works when you abstract it. Because with Sylvan, you kind of picture these wood elves popping in and out of the trees and playing their tricks on the orcs, you know, kind of like that card Feigned Voices is meant to exemplify. And then with Rohan, the Spirit Rohan cards tend to be just what you're saying. The scouts or even kind of the citizenry, the civilians of Rohan, just running along, going back and forth. Whereas the tactics cards, although it's a smaller pool, are meant to more strictly represent the cavalry, you know, the riders of Rohan. So I think thematically they've made that work, especially once the mounts finally came out. That's been really cool to play.
Yeah. Yeah, mounts are a whole huge, like, kind of sub-theme in the game now, whereas really before that, I mean, you had Asphaloth was a mount, but no one cared about his trait, necessarily, and mm-hmm. now with, like, the horse breeder and then all the different options on mounts, it's really, like, become its own sub-theme, which is cool.
Yeah, I think that questing, what questing represents can be a little abstract in this game sometimes, depending on the quest. Like, does it represent actually, like, how much ground your guys are covering, or does it represent, you know, finding clues or whatever it may be? But I think in Rohan's case, their high willpower is pretty much just set to represent, like, they're on horses, mm-hmm. they're covering a lot of ground. That's why they're clearing out these locations. And even with Theoden, I finally found a good explanation for his ability that, like, he's pumping up the tactics heroes because, you know, he's the horse lord. He's bringing along horses. He's turning them into cavalry so they can cover more ground now. So I think that's kind of the theme that's going on with them.
And sometimes the leadership and lore cards can seem like outliers. And I think especially, like, Leowini was kind of one of these ones that was just put in the core set before they had well, I don't know what the development cycle was like, but maybe they hadn't thought through exactly what Rohan was going to do, or they just needed somebody to draw cards, and Glaowini was a named character they could use. But yeah, Theodred does work in kind of in his own way there. So when you put a Rohan deck together, what are the real strengths? Obviously, there's questing, because Eowyn is still, to this day, the quintessential questing hero. But what are some of the other strengths? In other words, what are some purposes a Rohan deck is going to serve?
Well, the interesting thing to me is that Rohan as a trait doesn't really work together like dwarves do, where they pump each other up, or like, leadership Boromir, where he pumps up Rohan allies. Gondor, yeah. And so, I'm quickly perusing these cards here that all have the Rohan trait, and most of them, if not almost all of them, don't deal with Rohan at all. It really just is playing around with this when allies leave play sort of effect, which then works with other cards like Prince Imrahil, Horn of Gondor, and things that aren't really Rohan specific. So it's sort of interesting in a way that you're putting a deck together based on a trait that doesn't have a whole lot of support in and of itself. And interestingly, another side note, because I'll probably forget to say this later, we haven't gotten a single Rohan traded card, provided Hollabjorn is correct, since the Deluxe expansion. And so again, I've said this on other episodes, just because Adventure Pack cycle is set in a particular area doesn't mean we actually get cards from that area. You know, we sort of bemoaned, or at least I certainly did, the fact that Gondor wasn't really all that developed, even though we were in and around Gondor in the last cycle. And I suspect it'll be much the same way now. again, we've not gotten a single Rohan card in the whole cycle. We got him in the deluxe, but not here, so I wouldn't suspect we're going to get too many more with only two APs left to go. So anywho, long rant short here, it's just interesting to me how there aren't cards that really boost other Rohan characters, at least within those cards that have the trait of Rohan.
Or they're just kind of one-off events, like We Do Not Sleep or the other ones like that.
Astonishing Speed, that's the one. There's some synergy, but yeah, Matthew is definitely correct. It's interesting. There's little pockets of synergy though, because you see, like with Westfold Outrider, and then some of the Spirit Rohan allies, when you discard them for their effect, they are directly benefiting Aomer. So you can see some pretty direct synergy there. The one other example that we haven't covered yet is one of the other core set heroes is Dunhir. When you get like Spear of the Mark or Dagger of Westernesse or more recent weapons, where it was always a lot harder to get him that extra attack in early on in the game, and so he kind of waned in popularity for a while there, and now he's kind of seen a resurgence because these new weapons work so much better with him. Spear of the Mark in particular is perfect for Dunhir.
Yeah, and I think kind of speaking to the points you guys are making, they can definitely work together, but it's not as in your face, I guess, as dwarves or some other traits where it's like you just can see exactly what they're doing. Because the heroes tend to be a little bit specialized, and very different from each other. I mean, you have Hama, who's recycling tactics events, there's nothing really else like that in Rohan. I mean, you have Grima, who is a Rohan hero. He has the Rohan trait, who's very different. And all of them, we said they're good at questing, which a lot of their allies are, but among their heroes, it's really only Eowyn who has high willpower, and Theoden as well, I guess, if you want to throw them in there. But each hero in Rohan is very different, so in that way, you can create a few different Rohan decks that look very different depending on what heroes you're running with.
Okay, so speaking of Grima, he's one of those kind of oddball heroes where I definitely think there's an archetype around him, but I don't feel like it's at all related to Rohan. It's, there's like some really powerful Doom decks you can make, and you obviously want to have threat control and probably Lord Aragorn, but it really, I see almost no connection between those decks and the Rohan trait itself.
No, he's definitely an outlier, and even, he's going to come up eventually. Theoden King got very poor reviews because he was not the dyne of Rohan that we wanted him to be, and so the dwarves especially, and some other traits, like, we mentioned Gondor, have this very tight, thorough synergy where it does everything based on that trait. Rohan doesn't have that. And I like Theoden a lot. And I wonder how boring it would be if each trait kind of became the dwarves, where it was sufficient in and of itself. And I don't think I think everyone who was expecting Theoden to be the dying iron foot of Rohan, will later appreciate him, maybe not so much as a card, because he is kind of difficult to build a deck around, but simply the fact that it's not a repeat of the dwarves with horses. Rohan had to find its own niche, and they're doing a good job of letting each trait or faction, as you call it on your blog, Dan, find its own niche.
Yeah, I completely agree with what you just said, is that I think, and people might not appreciate it now, but I think they will, is that dwarves to me are almost too powerful, and like the dwarf decks, the last ones that I was building before I got bored with it, I realized, like, unless you lose within the first couple rounds, you're pretty much not losing with those decks against most scenarios, and I don't really want the game to be like that. I'd rather have, like, Sylvan, and I'm curious to hear your take on this as well, Ian. Sylvan is so much fun to play because there's so many decisions, and you're really, like, on the razor's edge a lot of the time. It's not this guaranteed win like the dwarves feel like.
Yeah, I think Rohan definitely provides a lot more interesting decisions than the dwarves, and they don't necessarily have that built-in synergy. The synergy they do have is, I think someone earlier was saying they have little small pockets of it, and, the mounts are kind of a uniting force, too. You have the Steed of the Mark for Spirit, and a couple of the tactics horses, Firefoot and the Rohan Warhorse, so that's kind of a uniting front, as it should be. But I think, although there are interesting decisions to make, I do want to say one of the strengths, I think, of the Rohan deck is For the most part, they are fairly simple and straightforward compared to even Sylvan and some of the other more tricksy decks. Like, I think for newer players, Rohan is one of the traits that they can kind of dig their teeth into and figure out how to make it work without too much trouble. You know, questing, taking care of combat, and not having to worry about too much crazy stuff.
On the flip side, I don't think it's too much to ask for a hero that mentions Rohan in its text box. That's not a trait. No, I'm serious. I mean, it doesn't have to give them an attack boost or a willpower boost like Celeborn does, like Dane does, like Leadership Boromir does. But it could be something like, I don't know what it could be, but it could somehow work with Rohan allies or events or attachments. And be sort of a unifying hero. You know, we've seen multiple versions of lots of characters. Lots of people want to see another Eowyn, for example, or certainly lots of people don't like Théoden, so they'd love another version of him. But I would hope that if we get another Rohan hero, that it does something with the trait itself, because most traits have it. I think Celeborn's a much improved version of Dane. It doesn't make the Sylvan decks broken, I don't think, but it at least is some sort of glue that you can put a hodgepodge of allies together and they at least have some sort of benefit. And it works across the table, which is kind of nice, too.
Well, I would love to see that, too. And I think getting to kind of our next topic, the weaknesses of the decks, one of the weaknesses is the fact that you do have a lot of your allies leaving play, and you have to keep that in mind as you're building. You're not going to have this fixed army of allies on the table because they're going to have to leave play. So it'd be cool to see maybe some hero, I don't know which character they would choose, Erkenbrand or somebody like that, who somehow in a non-broken way could maybe return one of those discarded allies at the end of the round or something, just to kind of supplement that weakness of your characters consistently leaving play.
Yeah, that's a really, really good idea. You should send that memo to Caleb.
Done and done. Now, what are some of the other weaknesses of the deck? So we kind of went through most of the strengths. But what are some of the weaknesses there besides your fact that your horses are constantly running away?
Another weakness of Rohan is not really real card draw options. Like, obviously, you can put in card draw options that aren't specific to Rohan. But I guess I'm just thinking of like some of the other traits, especially dwarves and some of the others actually have their own card draw options, and Rohan doesn't have that.
Well, Scott, there is Muster the Row Hiram, but that's, is that like top five, top ten? I got to look it up.
It's top ten, but it costs one, so
you have
I don't to pay
know.
One.
Yeah.
And their allies are so cheap that it's kind of like, I don't know.
For me, the biggest weakness, since I'm such a theme player, is that the cards that work best with Rohan are cards that aren't Rohan at all. So if you truly want a purely thematic Rohan deck, you're not using Prince Imrahil, you're not using the Horn of Gondor, you're not using, well, you might be using Valiant Sacrifice, but that would pair with Prince Imrahil, who's a leadership hero, and we don't have one for, there's Théodred,
but he's not as good of a fit.
So the thing is that the cards, to me, the biggest cards are Prince Imrahil and Horn of Gondor that really make my Aemir deck sing, and if I was going to be a purely thematic player, those cards would never enter my deck, I don't think. And so, to me, that's also part of a weakness of this sphere, is that, again, they don't really have, as Dan, you so often say, some of those glue cards that are Rohan-specific that really make them sing. They really have to sort of be piecemeal and pull from all sorts of different places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair.
Which doesn't bother me, to be fair. I love my Aemir deck. I call it my Allies Leave Play deck, as opposed to a Rohan deck. That's its name.
Yeah.
But it's a fantastic deck. Yeah. I think it works very, very well.
Yep.
And it's probably 90% Rohan, but I don't even know what percentage, but it's the bulk of it's Rohan, but a good part of it isn't, and that's what makes the deck work so well.
And I call my version of that deck, which I have a feeling is very similar to yours, the exact same thing. So you're absolutely right. It's not a Rohan deck per se. There are pockets, though. I mean, so an example of a card that I really like that I hope they do more of, and maybe they can do something around this with card draw, is I really like the Westfold Horse Breeder, because you start to get actual... And again, yes, technically not traded synergy, but the reality is when you're playing a Rohan ally and going for a mount that you put on a Rohan hero, to me, that's about as synergistic as you're going to get for Rohan.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And especially thematically. I mean, when you first turn drop a horse breeder and you go get Firefoot, and second turn you're having Aomer ride Firefoot, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's true.
And especially because when I first saw that card, it was one of those cards where I'm like, well, I don't know if it's very good. And then you see it in action. Oh my gosh, that card is so good. Mm. I mean, have you had a similar experience, Matthew, where like in the right scenarios, when you especially being able to pull like use Westfold Outrider and pull an extra guy and like set it up to where you can just trample over him. It's so much fun to do that.
I haven't had it work all that well in practice, to be honest. I don't draw it, or I draw it too late, or I'm just because of, again, I mostly play 3 and 4 player games now that the enemies don't all come to me due to engagement checks and the way those work, and you can only engage one a turn, you know, one optional. Or, anyway, long story short is I haven't had Firefoot be amazing, but I certainly think the potential's there.
Yeah.
See, everyone else in my group plays lower threat decks, which I think makes it work, right? Is if I'm starting at 30, my Leaves play starts at 30 with those three heroes, and then everyone else is in like somewhere in the 20s, and one of them's a mono spirit deck with a ton of threat control, so he can pretty much make sure everyone else is lower than me for the entire game. So I'm always getting like the higher engagement enemies are going to come to me. I'm an optional. I can create situations where I've got to, and then make it happen. So I think that's a key to that strategy.
Yeah, that kind of leads to one of the other, I guess both strengths and weaknesses we haven't really touched on is, we touched on a little bit, but just the fact Rohan kind of specializes in staging area attacks. But at the same time, Rohan heroes don't tend to be low threat. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not super high threat, but they're kind of in the middle, and it's, if you're going pure Rohan, it's hard to build a deck that's going to be able to do a lot of staging area attacks. You know, like the best Dune here decks, you're probably using some of the lower threat heroes that aren't Rohan, so it kind of introduces some interesting deck building design dilemmas if trying to figure out how you can keep enemies there to attack them, especially with like the tactics event 4th Aer Lingus, which allows the Rohan heroes to attack, but it's a combat action, so unless you can keep them in the staging area, then you're not going to be able to use it.
Well, that goes back to just what Matthew was saying, how some of these Rohan decks require non-Rohan cards. So either you need to have a way of lowering your threat, which isn't always practical, you know, even if you have Galathrim's Greeting or something like that, or you need like a Light in the Dark or something else that's going to bounce them back. There's no built-in Rohan card that's going to help you to solve that dilemma that you're talking about.
I think I know Matthew's a slave to theme, but I think if you think about where Rohan fits into the larger story of Tolkien, and I don't know if it's intentional on the designer's part or not, but I think it actually works really well thematically when you think about it, because they're not a power in and of themselves, and even in the Pelennor Fields where they saved the day, it was them with Gondor together. It's not like individually either of those armies would have won that battle.
Yeah, I will choose not to go on the tangent.
Well, I mean, if you disagree, that's just my take on it.
I think that's a good interpretation. And they've made it clear that they do intend for Gondor and Rohan to complement each other. So yeah, I think that's a fair interpretation. I was just going to say that, you know, it's not exclusively Rohan and Gondor together that make them great. They're not Fluffernutter. Rohan has held its own as a nation, you know, with just the resources that they have for a long, long time. So, and yeah, in the big scheme of Middle Earth and the big history of Middle Earth, they are complementary to Gondor, especially in the events you're talking about. But I think, you know, they definitely held their own.
You know what? This is a total tangent now that we're on one, but I'm really excited for the next Saga expansion, because I'm assuming, that we'll get more Rohan cards, at least one or two, because we'll be doing the Helm's Deep stuff, and...
Yeah, yeah.
Well, really just Helm's Deep. I guess the other things have nothing in that part of the book. Whatever quest they choose to do have nothing to do with Rohan, but I can't imagine we won't get at least one or two Rohan cards, so the end of the cycle, who knows? We haven't had any so far. Maybe we'll get a couple, but I love my Rohan deck, and I'm ready to spruce it up with something new.
Yeah,
so
give me my helming trait.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So we've talked about the Leaves play deck, and hopefully we'll get some new cards to zazz up those decks. What are some of the other favorite Rohan decks that you guys have built in the past? So we got the Eomer Leaves play deck.
I definitely made a crazy quest rush deck using just Corset plus Shadow.
Well, that was a big deal back in the day, the Rohan rush. What did that consist of?
Yeah, then? I remember taking an early version of that, and that was one of the ones. I think maybe that was the first deck I used to beat Massengetto's Gilliath, and you know, that quest was pretty tough when it came out, and that was one where I was just able to use, you know, similar to what Dan's saying, you know, Corset, Shadows of Mirkwood, and just quest the heck out of it before you can get killed.
And what does that consist of? Obviously, Eowyn.
So it's Eowyn. I mean, Dunehir, just because he's spirit, and at that point your options are kind of limited. I'm trying to remember who I guess it was probably Theodred, and you just go hard and you use the Snowborns and the horses for some location control, Rittermark's Finest or whatever. And then the scouts are perfect because you just chump block with them, and they're also helping with the location control, and you've got Sneak Attack Gandalf, and it's... I mean, for what... If you go back and look at the card pool at that point, that deck was actually really pretty solid. Because the card pool was still really limited after the first cycle. We didn't even have a deluxe to, you know, throw in some dwarven fun to any deck. So that was actually one of the more viable archetypes back then.
One of my first Trisphere decks was Theodred, Eowyn, and Hama. And that was actually a pretty well-rounded Rohan deck. I was one of my first successful deck building trials was that one. And it worked well because you had obviously combat with Hama and obviously questing with Eowyn. And that was where Eomund actually really shined. I think he's underplayed because he's, because he has a very specific ability and he's leaving play and he's kind of a costly card. But pairing him with Ride to Ruin was actually a pretty good combo because you could use him exhausted and then sacrifice him for Ride to Ruin to get some progress, and then all your Rohirrim would pop up, which was helpful back then because you didn't have Eomer or the Outrider or, you know, some of the other tactics cards we've seen. And so you needed to pull all those Spirit Rohirrim together to do any kind of damage. And so that was actually a pretty hefty combo. But
yeah, I guess, you know, speaking of Hama, kind of another, it's not necessarily exclusive to Rohan because Hama's been used in all types of deck, but this whole idea of like, recycling Fae, recycling Thicket of Spears, assuming you're using mono tactics, and just completely shutting down enemy attacks, which I don't know if it was meant to compensate for Rohan being weak defensively. The problem with that isn't a gameplay problem, it's more, at least for me, a problem of it becoming boring. You know, I've built Hama decks where it's just like, you just completely shut down the enemies, and there's, you know, it does get a little boring.
Well, he broke the Balrog. He came out two packs before the Balrog. And
yeah, they had to do a separate FAQ entry and completely change Faint just because of... Thanks, Hama. But
Hama is why we can't have nice things.
But I think if you move beyond just using him to recycle Faint, which is kind of the obvious ones, he enables some other interesting things, like recycling Fourth Aer Lingus so you can just keep attacking the staging area, or recycling, you know, anything.
Foehammer
with
for card draw, right?
Foehammer.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you don't have to get stuck in the Homolock, you know, that famous wrestling move.
Interestingly, well, maybe not that interestingly, but he's one of the very few heroes that I've never used and don't really have much of a desire to. The list of heroes I've not used or not tried is very, very small. I've used Spirit Pippin. I have yet to use Hama. You know, so
that's surprising to me as a tactics player, because it seems like there's got to be some goodies like Hands Upon the Bow or something like that you'd want to recycle.
You know, I actually don't like Hands Upon the Bow all that much, and I'm probably very much so in the minority on that. But you know, I've said it on a lot of shows. I'm not really a tricksy player, and I feel like Hama's not as tricksy as some of the other spheres, but I just want to play dudes and kill stuff and recycling. Or also as tactics, I often tend to not have a whole lot of cards in my hand to even recycle in the first place, because I play everything because I've Horn of Gondor or whatever. So,
yeah, and it's not like you have a lot of card draw in that sphere unless you're running Foehammer.
Right. So I don't know, just a hero that I've never used, and I don't suspect that I will, unless we do again get some sort of reason to want all Rohan heroes or something. But short of that, I don't see myself really using him.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering why you don't have Tactics Boromir in every one of your decks, because he seems like the
you know, the funny thing is, he's another hero that I've never really used. I think I might have used him in the progression series once or twice, but I'm not sure if I've...
He is the embodiment of what you're talking about.
I know. I think I don't like the threat raising, because it's so hard to lower it, in Tactics anyway. So, I don't use him a whole lot either.
One of the most ridiculous multiplayer games I've ever been a part of was I have a leadership tactics deck, and playing that deck, it's Eagles, obviously, with Tactics Boromir, and playing that with two other spirit decks as support decks, just keeping my threat low, was ridiculous. Like, basically, Boromir killed every single enemy in the entire quest, no exaggeration, and then they just managed the cancellation and questing, and we completely destroyed, like, I think it was a nightmare scenario, but it was interesting to see, like, going completely down the route of let one deck do all the fighting, what you're describing, Matthew, of just, like, you just want to kill things, and he killed a lot of things, and then the other decks filled in all the other gaps, so it's interesting to be able to do that.
One of the other things I think we kind of lightly touched on was talking about what kind of Rohan deck types are, is just that aimer, like, destruction deck where you just load him up with Firefoot and weapons, and he can just single-handedly just smash through everything.
Yeah, that's a good one. And I can that is indelibly tied just forever, for all of eternity, for perpetuity, to the image of Jean-Claude Van Damme with his feet on the two different trucks. And so then it's like,
yes,
Firefoot and the Rohan Warhorse. It's Aemir, yes, is like doubling up, like he's at the circus or something.
One of my buddies in Austin has the thematic description of that I think works as good as any, which is that it's not that he's riding two horses, it's that you get a normal Rohan Warhorse and he upgrades it to Firefoot, and that's how you're getting both of those.
I thought you were going to say, like, the horse was riding the horse and Aemir's on top of the horse.
No. It is not horses all the way down. That's absurd.
Bear cavalry, not so much.
Clearly, Firefoot would not let the Rohan Warhorse ride in. He has too much pride for
that's
that.
Right. We've mentioned pretty much all of the Rohan heroes, so let's put this out there, cage match style. What are your favorites?
Of the four? So we each pick one.
Okay, let me go over them again. We got Théodred, Dunhir, Eowyn, Aemir, Théodred, and I'm getting all confused here. Théoden, and some guy called Grima. I'll go first,
go ahead to
break the ice here. I'm going to go with Dunhir. He's a heartbreaker because I want his ability to work all the time, but you got to build a deck that complements it, and I haven't quite found that perfect deck yet. I want to like him the most because, one, he's an obscure character. He's mentioned like once or twice in the book. And also, I just love his ability, and it's good memories from the Corset days when he was just had this very unique ability that nobody else could do. So I'm going to go with Dunhir.
For me, since we're talking about favorites, if we were saying like the one I actually use the most, it would have to be Eowyn. I still throw in a ton of decks, but as far as favorites, I'm actually gonna go with the oddball and say Grima.
Oh my gosh!
Even though he's kind of like half Rohan, half Isengard, and the reason why is because I am the kind of player who I kind of like the cards that force me to think long and hard about how I'm going to use them. And I still haven't built a Grima deck that I'm like super happy with. So he's kind of that card that like sticks in the back of my head when I'm like doing something else in my day, like washing dishes or driving to work, thinking, can I make Grima work? So that's why I like him. I recently am experimenting with an all Rohan deck that is Grima, Eowyn, and Aemir, which is like
Three's Company,
awkward stare deck, because like Grima is like leering at Eowyn and Aemir is looking at Grima saying like, I'm gonna kill you. It actually works kind of interesting because a lot of the Rohan allies are pretty cheap to cost, so in a Trisphere deck Grima can lower them to one each, so you can kind of pump out some Rohan allies, and he provides that card draw that Rohan doesn't have, and you know, put Burning Brand and Protector of Lorien on him, and he can cover defensive weaknesses. So
yeah,
it's interesting. It's not quite there
and
yet.
It actually gives you Glaive Wine too, which is really cool. Yeah, the only thing missing from that deck, which I really like that idea, but it's missing the "Are you hitting on my sister?" card. That's the one.
Talk about infighting, right? Yeah.
Exhaust one hero to move damage from another hero.
But I do like how they're limited. Rohan is limited in lore, because as our opening quote of the episode said, they're not much for book.
That's
learning,
true. That's a great point.
For me, it's a little tough. I mean, my favorite to see on the table, but not necessarily played by me, would be Eowyn, because I love to be able to discard my dead uniques, because I always put three copies of almost every card in my deck. And so it's not even so much for her willpower, though that's fantastic. It really is just getting rid of those dead cards. But as far as my favorite to play, I don't think it's any surprise probably to anyone, it's Aemir. I haven't used him in a little while because I've been doing my Rumul deck, but my Allies League play deck was super, super fun, and he was linchpin to that.
Eowyn spoils us.
She does, for sure.
Get so used to her being there. Yep. We'll be short a point or two. It's like, oh, we'll just discard. Oh, yeah. Eowyn's not here.
When you don't have her, you're like, wait, someone's not playing Eowyn? What the hell are we doing? You know?
Yeah. And she's so good in multiplayer. Yes. I've realized. I mean, she's great. Sure, she's great solo, but multiplayer is. A lot of these scenarios recently, especially where you want to pace yourself and it's like, oh, we don't want to clear it this round. We do want to clear it this round, but not by too much. Or, you know, we just want to get rid of the active location, but we don't want to make quest progress or whatever. Like having that, okay, we're going to underquest by a little bit and then just get that extra, you know, rather than just blow through it is, she's so clutch. I'm still not going to pick her though, because... It's kind of the obvious choice, right? Well, yeah, she came in the core set. Clearly, when you see, you know, someone with four printed willpower, and it's like, yeah, it's pretty obvious she's powerful. I don't think anyone's going to argue against that. But for me, I like one of the lesser heralded Rohan heroes, which is Theodred. I think that, it would be great if he had more than one willpower for his ability, because you're always going to want to quest with him, but... Now that we have some other readying options, I think it's going to start to be a little bit more interesting, potentially, to be able to do more than just quest with him. And that ability is honestly underrated. And when I play him, the only time I play him anymore is multiplayer. And it's really, really nice when you're not first player to be able to just say, hey, does anyone need a resource? Oh, let me give an extra resource to the spirit player so they can do cancellation. Or let me give extra resource to the tactics player so they can play feint or whatever it is. And it makes a huge difference over the course of the game, starting the game with that hero.
True. We've spent some time talking about our favorite cards and things we'd like to include in a Rohan deck. Are there some Rohan-specific cards that are maybe just... you know, stay in the binder that aren't worth including in a specifically Rohan deck?
All of them? The events and stuff?
Like anything the characters, Rohan. Yeah, characters,
anything, the
events,
characters I
anything.
Use, the allies I use, the events that are about Rohan. Again, maybe my memory's failing me here. I don't think I use any of them. Because the fetch one's too expensive compared to all the other fetch ones. Then a few of them are 5 cost, which is ridiculous, I feel like.
Yep.
If my memory serves. So unlike the dwarf events or some of the Gondor events, like Behind Strong Walls, love that card for Gondor. But Rohan doesn't really have sort of the must-use events, I don't feel like. Even 4th Aerolingus, I've never really used it or made great effect of it. So the allies, great. Heroes, great. Their events, not so much.
So I've definitely used 4th Aerolingus, and I've also used Astonishing Speed, which is the 3 cost. All Rohan get like +2 willpower, I want to say. It's +2 or +3. But that card is amazing, and obviously in a rush deck like we were talking about earlier, if you're not questing with a lot of characters, then not as much so. But I agree with you, Matthew. The 5 cost, We Do Not Sleep, that is a card that I have never used. And the reason is, when you look at what it actually does, I mean, thematically it seems so cool. Oh, I'm going to quest with all my Rohan guys, and they're not going to exhaust. It's going to be so great. Well, look at all the guys you're questing with. They all have a ton of willpower and no other stats. So what else are you doing with those guys other than questing?
Well, I would say what I would want to happen would be a mutual accord, and then that card plays. So you've got all the, you know, let's say your buddy's playing a Gondor deck. You got all your allies still ready to go. But then again, in that case, it's basically just an overpriced... strength of arms, which nobody really wants.
I'm curious what you guys think about Steed of the Mark, because I think when it came out, there was a lot of debate about it, you know, and talking about Unexpected Courage basically makes it redundant.
I've never used it.
So have you guys used it?
I might have tried it, but it you got to pay for it, and so that's kind of frustrating. And Theodred makes it a little easier to do if you're using him, but not a card I love.
Yeah, the only deck I've ever used that in, Ian, is that the most recent deck that I posted is it's all around abusing 4th Aerolingus with Hama, And the one thematic concession that deck has to make is I do Steward, and I stick Steward on Hama. And then at that point, and I also have Errand Rider, there's like the two cards that technically are not Rohan. The rest of the deck is very Rohan-centric. But by being able to do the smoothing, by having Theodred be one of my heroes, and by having Steward, I've got this, just basically wealth of extra resources sitting around. And then having three of the steeds and having the horse breeder to go get those, it's not perfect, but yeah, the card can be okay. Unexpected Courage is one of those cards like Spirit Glorfindel that kind of break the metagame because it's just so right. good that every readying card in the game that you compare to Unexpected Courage without a very specific comparison, like, oh, Cram, if you have no resources left, is better than Unexpected. But I mean, in any other situation, Unexpected Courage is going to be the best readying effect in the game, but that kind of sucks because it makes it so that every other card sucks in comparison in a head-to-head. Yeah.
I mean, that's basically what undercuts that card, and it's like, well, Unexpected Courage is cost 2, and this one is only 1, but I have to pay 1 to use it the first time, so Unexpected Courage is equal in cost for the first use, and it just gets worse and worse over time. I guess the one advantage is you can use the Horse Breeder to fetch it, but I think the only reason I've used it is basically thematic reasons, because yeah. I was tired of Unexpected Courage and wanted to try out the horses, and it has the cool factor. And it's actually pretty good on Grima. I realize I'm on like the Grima love train right now, but because he has 2 willpower and 2 defense, or even his attack. So I think the other problem is a lot of the Rohan heroes tend to have pretty lopsided stats. They're either really good at questing or really good at attacking, but they don't tend to have very balanced stats.
Yeah, I'm with you. Even its inclusion in that deck, you could totally argue that Unexpected would be the better card. One of the things that I've been doing lately that is relevant to this discussion, because Rohan is kind of a weird theme, you know, in terms of thematic versus strategic in this game, is that I've actually been including more of these less strategic, more thematic cards as a handicap. Because, like, if I find a scenario that I really used to enjoy, but now with all the power cards I can just crush it, I'll go back and play it with, like, this Rohan deck where I'll use the Steed instead of Unexpected. And yeah, clearly it's not as good of a card when I draw it, but the question then becomes, can I still beat this scenario with inferior cards? Which I'm sure will bug the hell out of Matthew, but to me, like, that's kind of a way of, rather than necessarily doing Nightmare on everything, just to say, well, I want to make this a little bit harder. Let me try a more thematic deck.
Well, we love the Rohirrim, and we'll be excited to see what the next cycle and saga expansions hold for our Horse Lord buddies. But before we close out the show, we would be remiss if we did not discuss the latest adventure pack, the Nin and Ilf. So what do we think about this, guys? Let's start with the quest kind of quickly, our general impressions of the quest. What's good about it, bad about it, and so on.
Hard and 4-player, that's all I can say.
I like it. I've seen some people say that it's on the easier side solo, but I've actually had some trouble beating it. Then again, I've purposely not used my like Gandalf destroy everything deck because I want to preserve some of the challenge. So I've been using some new like weird Ranger decks and this new Rohan deck, and so that makes it a little more tough. But I like that the quest cards are randomized, but all the effects on the quest cards, the stage 2s, are really, really, really tough. You know, only being able to play 1 card, or not being able to draw cards or resources from card effects. So it makes it interesting in that way.
Yeah, I really like it, and I agree. I haven't played it yet 4-player, but just playing it, even solo, I didn't beat it the first time I played it. It took me a couple tries, and I like the challenge of it, and it puts you kind of on a clock with the threat raise, which is nice, too. You can't really just turtle it.
Yeah. All I can say is tighten your belts. I flipped through the cards after I bought the pack, and I thought, that is the coolest card thematically since A Very Good Tale. That is such a cool card, and it immediately brought to mind my Trisphere Hobbit deck, and those rounds where I don't have enough to spend anything, and what a great boon that will be, and a thematic boon to those decks. So tighten your belts, I'm all about it.
It's a win more card
hungry
to me.
Hobbits.
But, you know, it's one of those cards where I'd hate to play a deck around not being able to play anything, but it's certainly a cool card.
Yeah, and it's a...
it's just a win more card. It's, well, I couldn't play anything, so now let me do this. Now, I mean, again, I suppose you could be strategic, and if you're already in a good position, you could wait around and not play anything. I think this could be a great card in Druid and Forest, for sure. Because if you purposefully don't spend, you now have extra in case Prowl happens or what have you. So I think that'll be a great card in that quest, but normally not one I'm going to use.
I think the fact that Matthew doesn't like this is also because he's never played Errand Rider in one of his decks.
No, I use Errand Rider in every deck.
Giving resources to other people.
I do it all the time.
Well, because that's where I see this card is actually really good, is even in a lot of multiplayer games where I've got leadership, there might be rounds where I just go, you know what, I'm not going to do anything this round, I'm going to give to other people. And then being able to have that be net me three more at the end of that round, that's pretty huge.
See, I told you.
I didn't say it was bad, I just said I'm not going to use it.
For me, I was really excited to finally get Wingfoot. They spoiled that card way back when. And so I've just been waiting. I know a lot of players like to proxy out cards that have been spoiled in play, but I have my own rule that I will not like proxy or play with a card till it's released, and it's just because I like to maintain some like anticipation in the game. And like, I don't have anyone against anyone who does that. It's just my own thing. So anyway, long story short is that I've been waiting forever to use Wingfoot, even though I know exactly what it does, because I like playing lore. I like the whole ranger thing. And so, with Lore Aragorn, he can finally make use of some of those stats without unexpected courage. I can just go all lore without spirit. And so it's a lot of fun.
No one's mentioned our Mirkwood Pioneer, the card we got to spoil.
Let's not talk about that.
But, for me, I've never proxied until recently, and I did the Galadin Archer. And I remember some folks on our Facebook asking, oh, how did she work out in an actual deck? And, three cards of a 50-card deck, I don't draw her all that often, and dealing one damage really doesn't do that much. So while in my Rumal range deck she replaces Horseback Archer, which costs 3 and isn't quite as cool, I think it's an improvement in that deck. I can't say that it's game-breaking or really all that exciting, because, again, one damage on a bazillion hit point enemy doesn't do a ton. I like the Bow of the Galadrim. I think it's pretty cool. It's helpful. But, is it better than the Rivendell Blade or lots of these other things that we have? I don't think so. What I like is it can go into characters. If I plan on keeping Rumul around for a while, this is a card that can go on him. So those are, of course, being tactics cards are my favorite of the set. But I really think, by and large, I like Mablung, although I tried him once and the deck totally sucked. So I was like, I'm not going to use him anymore. But I think, by and large, it's a pretty solid adventure pack. I think all the cards are pretty cool. Even Follow Me is interesting.
I like that card a lot.
There's not a whole lot of reasons to want to be the first player in every quest. Some quests there are, but it's one to draw one, and, I don't have a major problem with that. I think it's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So, a couple thoughts. I would be very curious what heroes, we can have that for a later episode, what heroes you built with Mablung where he wasn't very good, because I think that hero is really, really good, and I think it's going to take the right deck to highlight that.
I don't remember who I had him with. I think I had him with Brand and Legolas. And
resource acceleration for tactics is huge,
and it's going to be Westfold, and I know that Tactics Aragorn when he comes out is going to be just ridiculous with Mablung, but that'll be a later episode where we can go all about how Tactics is getting a lot more options, which I'm happy to see as a newfound convert to the sphere. But I actually also didn't ever proxy until recently, and the card that did it for me though was actually Galadriel, because I really like the Sylvan archetype, and it's getting better and better as this cycle goes on. I'm really happy with how that's been developed, and she is so critical to making that whole thing work. So I finally gave him, was like, okay, I'm gonna proxy Galadriel and try her out. And she's also one of my favorite characters in the book, so I kind of had to. But as far as this, the one other card that, and I'll throw this challenge out there for our listeners, is I would love to hear back from you guys on what you think about Defender of the West. A local Austin friend and I were chatting tonight about that card, and there's a lot of allies that you could see getting passed around the table. Hobbit Gandalf is one example, but another one that I think would be really cool with this is the new Boromir ally, because this card lets you take undefended, and damage causes him to ready. There's all sorts of shenanigans, especially if you have some healing on the table, with having the first player always have a Boromir that can potentially do multiple things every round is pretty cool. But this is my challenge to listeners, is come back with us in comments on Facebook, hit us up on Twitter, or, you know, comments on the blog, wherever you feel like sending correspondence. What's the ally that you would love to see, you know, used with Defender of the West? I'm curious on everyone's take.
Snowbrand's
quite you.
Yes.
My binder.
Pass the binder around.
It's too bad. It's too bad the scout is not unique. Otherwise, I'd be all for that idea.
He's unique to me.
What's the unique? what's the unique Outlands ally?
Oh, Forlorn. That Fat Forlorn. Yeah,
he'd probably be pretty good for that one.
Yeah, and you know who I totally forgot about? We didn't talk about in this Rohan episode is Elfhelm, who's such a cool character and such a cool ally with a pretty unique ability, but. Alas, Elfhelm did not make the cut. Sorry, buddy.
He's kind of expensive.
He is very expensive, but there are ways around that.
And he has the same exact stats as Northern Tracker, so it makes it, yeah. It's hard to make the cut, Elfhelm. Sorry,
well,
dude.
Well, I should have brought it up earlier. anything else? Any closing comments before we put a bow on this one?
Just a random tidbit, because I meant to mention early but didn't. For those who are new to Rohan deck building, Stand and Fight is great. Yeah. You know, they're going to be, your allies are going to be discarded, so that's a good way to bring them back to life and get extra use.
True. Okay, well, this has been episode 17 of the Gray Company podcast. Thanks as always for listening. You can find us on various places around the interwebs. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter. You can email us at thegraycompanypodcast@gmail.com. And as always, you can find us on WordPress, graycompanypodcast.wordpress.com. From there, you can stream all of our episodes, and there are links to the rest of our social media sites, even our YouTube channel, which has gotten a little bit of activity. We're going to try to spruce that up in weeks to come. But before we close out, we have a very exciting, very special announcement that we want you guys all to hear and take part in. We are
quitting the show.
Matthew's finally, we finally got rid of him. We finally found a loophole in his contract. And no, even better than that, we want your money. We have set up, and we will be launching soon, a Patreon account. If you are unfamiliar with Patreon, it's basically, it's similar to Kickstarter, but it's perpetual, and we will get paid by your donations by episodes. And so to kick that off, we're having a little bit of a giveaway. So if you go to patreon.com/grayco, and we'll post links on all of the aforementioned sites. And if you sign up to be a patron in any level from 1 cent to $1 million, you will be entered into a drawing for an alternate art Aragorn. Somehow, shady old Matthew got his hand on a couple extra copies. And so, like I said, anyone who goes on Patreon and becomes a patron between now and the next episode, so about 3 weeks, you'll be entered into that drawing. What will we be using this money for? Well, I'm glad you asked. First of all, the main thing is to cover our hosting fees for the podcast itself, to cover things like shipping for the contest that we do. And it's also going to go to other projects, like we were just talking before the show about hallofbjorn.com. Dan pays out of pocket to keep that wonderful database going. So any money we get will cover those things, those kind of services that we provide for you guys. And hopefully you think it's worth maybe $1 a month. That would be awesome. So anyway, go ahead and get involved with that. It's patreon.com/grayco. Anybody who enters will get possibly a copy of that beautiful alternate art Aragorn hero.
For anyone that's noticed some of the issues in the past with it being up and down, I've actually just went up to the next tier on Amazon, so it's been very, knock on wood, it's been stable for the last, like, I would say 5 or 6 days or so. So that's great, and I know everyone in the community loves being able to go to the search engine and always have it up, but that's kind of one of the reasons why we're doing this is, you know, it's not free, so...
Yep.
We appreciate anything anyone can donate. Cool.
All right. Well, thanks again for listening. Find us online, chat us up, and don't forget to meet Dan's challenge, which unique ally is going to be the best for Defender of the West. But Anyways, good night, everybody. We'll see you next time.
You'd have to be way more professional, Matthew. Yeah. Yeah, you would. Look, so far it's cool that we're kind of, you know, dragging your dead weight, but I mean, if someone's going to pay us money, I'm just messing with you.